You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
Stop by Sherwin-Williams and get 30% off select paints and stains June 13th through the 23rd. It's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Refresh your home inside and out with colors that make every space feel brand new. From cozy interiors to stunning exteriors, we've got the perfect shade for your next project. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
I'd always heard that picking up hitchhikers was a risk, but I'd never had any issues. As a college student on a tight budget, I took long drives to clear my mind, and sometimes a bit of company helped keep things interesting. That's how I ended up stopping for him that night. I was driving back from a weekend camping trip with friends, taking the scenic route through the countryside to clear my mind before hitting campus again. The road wound through hills and thick forest. I had the window down a crack, and the fresh night air kept me awake as I navigated the quiet road. It was peaceful, that kind of stillness you don't get around town. Just as I was settling into the peaceful rhythm of the drive, I spotted a figure up ahead, standing alone on the shoulder, a man, just beyond the bend. He was walking with his head down, hands stuffed in his jacket pockets, looking like he'd been on foot for a while. At first, I thought he'd passed without noticing me, but then he looked up, squinting against my headlights. He raised a hand in a sort of half wave, like he wasn't sure he'd even be noticed. I hesitated, looking around at the empty road. No one was around. I was alone. Against my better judgment, I pulled over. The man jogged up to the passenger side, peering in through the open window. He looked around my age, maybe a little older, with scruffy hair. There was something intense about his gaze, a sort of wide-eyed urgency. "Need a lift?" I asked, trying to sound casual. "Yeah," he nodded, looking back over his shoulder. "Thanks, man. Just trying to get away from here." He climbed in quickly, shutting the door with a little too much force. As I pulled back onto the road, I noticed he was sitting stiffly, eyes darting to the rearview mirror every few seconds, as if he expected to see someone tailing us. I couldn't help but watch him out of the corner of my eye, a little on edge. "So, where are you headed?" I asked, trying to keep things light. "Doesn't matter," he said, looking over his shoulder again. "Just as far away from here as possible." "All right," I said, trying not to let his odd response bother me. I figured he was just nervous, maybe on the run from something. But as we drove, his twitchy behavior started getting to me. Every so often, he'd lean forward, scanning the road ahead or looking nervously out the window. "What's got you so jumpy?" I asked, half joking. He hesitated, his fingers drumming nervously on his knee. "Someone's following me," he said finally. I raised an eyebrow, looking over at him. "Out here? Looks like we're the only ones on the road, man." He just shook his head, eyes locked on the rearview mirror. "You don't understand. They've been following me for miles. Every time I think I lose them, they show up again. I thought, maybe with your car, I could finally get away." I wanted to roll my eyes, brush it off as paranoia or some delusion, but something about the way he spoke kept me from doing it. His voice was raw, edged with genuine fear. I gave a slight nod, trying to reassure him, though I was still skeptical. "Don't worry, we're moving pretty fast. No one's going to catch up to us." He didn't respond. Just kept staring into the mirror, his face pale and tense. I focused on the road, telling myself that he was just spooked, probably imagining things. But a few minutes later, headlights appeared in the distance, coming up fast. I didn't think much of it at first. After all, people sped along these empty roads all the time. But as the car got closer, I noticed it was swerving slightly, its lights bouncing along the road as if it was deliberately trying to keep up with us. My passenger tensed, clutching the seat. "That's them," he whispered. I knew they'd find me. I felt a prickle of unease as the car drew closer, the headlights glaring in my rearview mirror. All right, maybe they're just passing through, I said, hoping I sounded more confident than I felt. But they didn't pass. Instead, they matched my speed, edging closer until I could feel their presence right behind us. The car swerved toward us, its headlights illuminating the inside of my car. The light reflected in the side mirror and illuminated my passenger's anxious face. I pressed harder on the gas, gripping the wheel, and he gritted his teeth, looking back. They're trying to run us off the road, he said. You've got to take the next turn. Go left. Left? That's the old service road, I muttered. It doesn't even lead anywhere. It doesn't matter, he insisted, his eyes wide with fear. They won't expect it. Just trust me. I wasn't thrilled with the idea, but the other car was pressing us toward the edge of the road. At the last second, I swerved, taking the narrow left turn onto the service road. We sped down the winding path, the trees closing in around us. The headlights behind us wobbled as the car tried to follow, but I could tell they hadn't expected the turn. They skidded slightly, their lights falling back. I felt a surge of relief as we put a little distance between us and them, but it didn't last long. My passenger was tense, directing me with quick, sharp instructions. Left here, right there, all the while looking back to see if we'd lost them. Finally, after a series of sharp turns that left my heart racing and my grip on the wheel tight, the headlights behind us disappeared. I slowed down, breathing hard, my pulse still racing. My passenger slumped back, closing his eyes for a moment, his shoulders sagging in relief. Thanks, he muttered. I thought I'd never lose them. No problem, I said, trying to catch my breath. But who the hell were they? He didn't answer, just looked out the window, his face unreadable. I had a million questions, but something about his expression told me I wouldn't get any answer.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
Lowe's knows how to set off your July 4th with savings. Right now, buy one, get one free on select one coat coverage interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Plus, get two select 2 or 2.5 quart red, white, and blue annuals for just $10. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, excludes Alaska and Hawaii. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for more details.
After a few minutes of tense silence, the hitchhiker finally looked over at me. You should just take me home, he muttered, his tone sharp and almost pleading. I hesitated. Something about his request felt off, a hint of desperation that made my nerves stand on edge. Look, I think it's safer if we head to the next police station, I said firmly. They can help you from there. He turned to me, his face twisted with something close to anger. No, he said, his voice low and tense. Just drop me at the next gas station. I don't need the police. I'll find another ride. Reluctantly, I agreed, pulling into a gas station a few miles down the road. I expected him to thank me or at least say something, but he just climbed out without a word, not looking back as he walked toward the dark edge of the parking lot. Once he was gone, I just sat there, trying to wrap my head around everything. I looked over to where he'd walked off, but he'd already melted into the shadows around the gas station. My hands were still gripping the wheel, my heart racing as I started wondering, what if that car that chased us had actually marked my car somehow? I'd seen stuff like that in movies, but what if they'd really managed to take down my plates? I didn't want to take any chances, so I headed straight to the nearest police station. I stumbled over my words as I explained the whole weird situation. The guy, the car that followed us, and the aggressive driving. The cop nodded and took it all down. But when I finished, all he said was, "You did the right thing coming here. But just be careful, okay?" That was all I needed to hear to stay off that stretch of road for a while. For the next few months, I went out of my way to avoid it, taking the long way whenever I could. I was constantly looking over my shoulder, checking my mirrors, expecting to see those same headlights coming up behind me. Sometimes I'd catch myself checking my car for weird marks or scratches, anything that might give someone a reason to follow me again. I kept telling myself it was just a freak incident, but every now and then when I'm out driving alone, I can't shake the feeling that someone might be watching. And I still wonder about that guy I picked up, where he was headed, and who was after him. I'm a mechanic, and I drive a lot, especially on the weekends when I pick up parts for my shop. I've always been one of those people who didn't mind offering a lift if I saw someone stranded. I figure everyone needs a hand sometimes, and out in the middle of nowhere where traffic's light and cell service can be spotty, it can be a lifesaver. It was back in July 2018. It was a quiet Saturday evening, and I was driving along a mostly deserted highway. The sun was just starting to set, and I figured I had another hour or so before the road got completely dark. I was humming along to the radio, my mind already on the parts I just picked up and the work waiting for me back at the shop, when I noticed a couple on the side of the road up ahead. They were standing by a beat-up old sedan. I slowed down, rolling my window down as I pulled up beside them. They looked a bit rough around the edges, but nothing too out of the ordinary. The man was tall, with messy hair, wearing a jacket that looked like it'd seen better days. The woman was a little shorter, with stringy hair that hung around her face, and she was clutching her arms like she was cold. They both looked relieved to see me. "Hey, need a lift?" I asked. The guy nodded, a smile spreading across his face. "Yeah, thanks, man. We're headed toward the next town. Our car just up and died." I unlocked the doors. "Hop in. I'll take you as far as the gas station in town." They climbed in, the woman in the back and the man beside me up front. He held out his hand, introducing himself as Carl, and his wife Diane gave a quick nod from the back seat. They seemed nice enough, and we started talking as we drove. Carl asked me about my car, admiring the engine's low hum and asking if I worked on it myself. "Yeah, I'm a mechanic," I told him, launching into a bit about my shop and the kinds of cars I usually work on. They seemed genuinely interested, especially Carl. He kept nodding, asking questions about my favorite models, tools I used, all the usual stuff. Diane chimed in now and then, asking if I worked late hours or if I was usually out on the road at night, little things like that. It seemed harmless at first, just curious questions. But as the minutes ticked by, the questions started to shift. They stopped feeling like small talk and started feeling more personal. Diane leaned forward from the back seat, asking if I usually drove alone on these long trips, if anyone knew my route tonight. Carl asked if I lived alone, if I had family nearby. I answered vaguely, my responses getting shorter each time, starting to feel like I was giving away more than I wanted to. The light was fading fast, and the road stretched out in long, empty miles before us. As I drove, I felt Diane's eyes on me in the rearview mirror. She wasn't blinking much, just staring, her gaze dark and steady. "You must get lonely out here sometimes," she said, her voice quiet, almost a murmur. I gave a short laugh, trying to keep things light. "Nah, I don't mind. Just me and the road." Carl shifted beside me, and I caught a glimpse of something shiny in his hand, a small, serrated knife. He was holding it casually, spinning it between his fingers like it was nothing, but the sight of it made my stomach clench. "Nice blade," I said, trying to keep my tone steady. "What's it for?" He looked at me, his smile a little too wide, a little too slow. "Oh, you know, just like to keep one around. Never know when it might come in handy." My grip on the wheel tightened as I looked from the road to the knife and back again. I told myself not to overreact, that maybe I was just overthinking things. but I couldn't ignore the sense that something wasn't right, that the questions weren't just curiosity, and that the knife was more than just a handy tool. "So you work pretty late, huh?" Diane asked, her voice soft and smooth. "Ever get any visitors?" I didn't answer, just kept my eyes on the road, the empty stretch of highway stretching out into the dark. I felt Carl shift beside me, the knife glinting as he adjusted his grip, and I could feel the tension growing, thickening the air in the car. Without thinking, I hit the brakes hard. The car lurched forward, throwing us all against our seats as I swerved onto the shoulder. The sudden stop seemed to catch them off guard. Carl dropped the knife, and Diane gave a little gasp, her hands bracing against the seat. "All right, end of the line," I said, my voice steadier than I felt. "This is as far as you're going with me." For a moment, they both just stared, like they couldn't quite believe what they were hearing. Instinctively, my hand drifted to my waist as if reaching for a gun, even though I didn't have one. Carl looked down at his knife on the floor, his gaze flicking back up to me, but he didn't reach for it. Instead, he just gave me that same unsettling smile, his eyes narrowing. Diane leaned forward, close enough that I could feel her breath on my neck. "You're making a big mistake," she murmured. "Out, now," I said, not backing down. Slowly, they climbed out, neither of them saying another word. They just stood there, watching as I pulled the door shut and shifted back onto the road. I watched them in the rearview mirror as I drove away, their figures fading into the darkness, still standing there on the side of the road, looking after me with those strange, knowing smiles. As I drove away, I couldn't shake the feeling that I'd narrowly avoided something terrible. The road was empty ahead of me, the silence in the car loud and heavy. I kept looking in the mirror. By the time I reached the gas station, my hands were still shaking. I stopped to fill up, trying to calm myself down, but I kept replaying those faces in my mind, the way they'd looked at me as they stepped out, like they knew something I didn't. The cashier noticed my pale expression and asked if everything was all right, but I just nodded, grabbing my change and heading back to the car, eager to put as much distance as I could between myself and that stretch of highway. I never saw them again, but I think about them every time I drive that road. I can't help but wonder what they wanted, what they were planning. And sometimes on those long, quiet drives, I catch myself checking the rear view, expecting to see two shadowy figures standing in the distance, watching me with those same unsettling smiles, as if they're still waiting for their chance. I never thought I'd be the kind of person who picks up a hitchhiker. You hear enough warnings about it, about the risks, the stories that make you shiver a bit, but brush off with a laugh because that stuff doesn't really happen. But when you're out there, sometimes instinct takes over. It was late on a Friday night, and I was on my way back to campus from a study session at a friend's place about an hour away. My car was old, a little rusty, and it rattled when it hit any bump bigger than a pebble, but it had character. And as a broke college student, it got me where I needed to go. The road was a two-lane stretch that snaked through farmland and thick patches of forest, and with the rain pouring down in sheets, visibility was already bad. My windshield wipers were working overtime, but even on high, they could barely keep up. About halfway through my drive, I noticed something up ahead, just off to the side of the road, a figure, drenched, standing alone in the downpour. She was hunched, her dark hair plastered to her face and neck, her shoulders drawn up against the rain. I slowed down without thinking, my headlights illuminating her pale, shivering form. She looked young, maybe in her early 20s, and she was clutching her arms like she was freezing. I don't know why I did it. Maybe it was the look in her eyes when she turned to see me. There was something almost pleading about it, and before I'd even registered what I was doing, I pulled over, my car coming to a stop just in front of her. I rolled down the passenger window a bit, calling out, "Hey, do you need a ride?" She didn't answer right away, just nodded and walked toward the door, moving in this slow, hesitant way that felt weird. I chalked it up to the cold, or maybe the exhaustion of being stranded in the middle of nowhere. She climbed in without a word, pulling the door shut. As she settled into the seat, I saw just how soaked she was. Water pooled on the leather seat, her clothes clinging to her skin. Her hair was matted and hung in thick strands around her face, and she didn't look at me, just stared straight ahead, her hands clenched together in her lap. "Where are you headed?" I asked, trying to sound casual. "Just the next town," she murmured. Her gaze was locked on the road ahead, unblinking, like she was in some kind of trance. "Sure, no problem. It's not far." I tried a few more questions to make small talk. "Rough night?" Or, "Where were you coming from?" But she didn't answer, just kept that blank stare forward. The only sound was the drumming rain on the roof and the dull hum of the car engine. The silence started to feel heavy, but I tried to focus on the road. After all, she was just a stranger, probably exhausted and grateful to get out of the rain. But after a few miles, I felt her eyes on me, like she was studying me out of the corner of her eye. I tried not to look over, but the weight of her stare grew stronger, pressing into me. And then she began to mutter, so quietly I almost missed it. Her lips moved, her voice barely a whisper, the words slurred and incoherent. I strained to listen, catching bits and pieces. "Dangerous. Never safe, always watching." "Excuse me?" I looked over, trying to keep my tone light, but there was a quiver in my voice I couldn't quite hide. She didn't respond, just continued muttering to herself, her fingers twisting together in her lap. My stomach twisted and I found myself gripping the wheel tighter. Maybe she was just in shock, I thought, or cold enough to be out of it. But I couldn't shake the feeling that there was something more. Something wrong. A few minutes later, without warning, she lunged at the wheel. Her fingers wrapped around the steering wheel, her grip vice-like as she wrenched it to the right, sending us swerving toward the ditch. I shouted, struggling to pry her hands off, but she was strong, unnaturally strong for someone her size. Her face was twisted in a look of pure rage, her teeth bared, her eyes wide and glassy. "What are you doing?" I screamed, struggling to keep control. I felt the tires skid, the car fishtailing as I fought her off. I managed to slam the brakes, sending us jolting forward. Her grip loosened, and I jerked the wheel back, pulling us to a shaky stop on the shoulder. My hands were shaking as I tried to catch my breath, my heart racing, every nerve on high alert. I turned to yell, to demand what on earth she was doing, but she was gone. The passenger door hung wide open, swinging slightly in the rain, and the seat was empty. I stared, my mind trying to piece together what had just happened. I stumbled out of the car, the rain pelting down as I called out, "Hello? Where'd you go?" My voice sounded small, swallowed up by the storm. There was no answer, just the endless patter of rain on the asphalt and the rustling of nearby trees. I shined my phone flashlight around, looking for any sign of her, but the rain had already washed everything away. Shaken and confused, I climbed back into the car, slamming the door and locking it behind me, my hands still trembling. I looked around, expecting her to reappear on the shoulder, her face twisted with that eerie expression. My fingers still tingled from where she'd gripped the wheel, and the faint scent of wet earth clung to the seat beside me, an unsettling reminder that she'd been there at all. I drove off, barely able to keep my focus on the road. Every nerve in me was on edge, my gaze flickering to the passenger seat every few seconds as if she might suddenly materialize again, dripping wet and staring. When I finally saw the lights of the next town, I went straight to the police station. I didn't even know what I was planning to say, but I knew I couldn't just let it go. Inside, I explained to the officer at the desk that I'd picked up a woman stranded on the roadside and that she'd disappeared under strange circumstances. I did my best to describe her. The drenched clothes, her long dark hair, the look of fear that never left her face. The officer listened carefully, then exchanged a look with another officer nearby. "Actually, we've had a missing person report matching that description," he said, pulling up a file. "She's been missing since last night, a woman in her mid-30s, diagnosed with schizophrenia. Her family reported that she ran away from home, convinced she was being followed or in some kind of danger." A chill ran through me as I pieced it together. She genuinely believed she was being chased. That frantic look, her desperation. It wasn't just the rain or the isolation. She truly thought something was after her. I gave them the exact spot where I'd last seen her, hoping it might help. The next morning, I got a call. The police had found her not far from where I'd left her. She was disoriented but unharmed, and they'd managed to reunite her with her family. In the end, I helped bring her back to her family. She wasn't just a mystery lost in the rain. She was a real person who needed someone to care enough to stop. Even though it could have ended badly for both of us, I'm glad I was able to help her find her way back home. Owning a flower shop might sound relaxing, but most days it's a lot of hard work. Early mornings, long hours, and sometimes an evening delivery here and there. But it's worth it. There's a peace that comes from working with flowers, the smell of fresh blooms, the way each arrangement adds a touch of beauty to someone's day. That night, I was driving home after a long shift. The sun was dipping below the trees, casting an orange glow over the quiet country road. I liked this route home. It was slower but beautiful, and by evening, the road was usually empty. The peacefulness was short-lived. I was nearing the forested part of the road when I spotted a figure up ahead, standing perfectly still by the side of the road. At first, I thought it was a trick of the fading light, maybe a shadow cast by the trees, but as I got closer, I could see her clearly, a woman standing there, clutching something to her chest. The sight made me uneasy, but I couldn't just drive by. As I approached, I slowed down, rolling my window down a crack to get a better look. She was in her mid-30s, thin and pale, with dark hair. Her clothes were outdated and looked oddly out of place. She was cradling an old, tattered doll, a porcelain-faced relic with cracked skin and lifeless button eyes. She was murmuring to it softly, her lips moving in a faint whisper. The doll itself was unsettling, but the way she was holding it, like it was a living, breathing companion, made the whole scene even stranger. "Do you need a ride?" I asked. Her eyes snapped up to meet mine. There was a strange intensity in her gaze, a silent plea that seemed to reach out and wrap around me, compelling me to open the door. She nodded, almost mechanically, and climbed into the passenger seat without a word. The doll was nestled against her chest, one of its cracked eyes catching the last bit of sunlight as she settled in. As we started moving again, I couldn't shake the feeling of unease. She was staring straight ahead, but every now and then she would look down at the doll, stroking its matted hair and whispering in a voice too low for me to hear. I tried to brush it off. Maybe she was just eccentric. Maybe the doll was her way of coping with something. But still, the way she cradled it, the way her fingers moved gently over its cracked face, sent a shiver through me. "Where are you headed?" I finally asked, trying to break the silence. She didn't answer right away, just kept looking down at the doll. Finally, in a whisper that felt more like a secret, she said, "It's not safe here." I laughed nervously, trying to make light of her words. "Well, we're on a pretty quiet road. Don't think we're in too much danger out here." She looked at me then, her eyes wide and unblinking. "She says it's not safe. She always knows." I forced a smile, not knowing what to say to that. "Who? Your doll?" The woman's eyes drifted back to the doll, and she stroked its cheek as if comforting a child. "You should listen to her. She always knows." I swallowed, trying to keep my focus on the road, but every glance at the passenger seat only made the knot in my stomach tighten. There was something wrong here, something I couldn't put my finger on. Her whispered conversations with the doll grew more frequent, and I started catching bits and pieces of what she was saying. Things like, "Yes, we'll be careful," and I know, but he's helping us," as if she and the doll were in on some secret I wasn't part of. After a few minutes of this, I tried to change the subject. "So, do you live around here?" The woman didn't respond right away. Instead, she held the doll up to her ear, as if listening to it. After a moment, she looked back at me, her gaze piercing. She doesn't like questions. A chill ran through me. I forced a laugh, though it sounded shaky even to my own ears. "Got it. No questions." The woman went back to whispering to the doll, her voice soft and rhythmic, like she was soothing it. I couldn't make out the words, but the tone was almost protective, as if she was afraid of something out there, lurking just beyond the reach of the headlights. The sky grew darker as we drove, the trees casting long shadows that seemed to close in on the road. Every minute that passed, the air in the car grew heavier, more stifling, until it felt like I could hardly breathe. I could feel her eyes on me, watching from the corner of her gaze, as though she were waiting for something, waiting for me to slip up, or maybe for me to understand something I didn't yet grasp. Finally, I couldn't take it anymore. I pulled over, my hands trembling slightly as I gripped the wheel. "Listen," I said, "I think this is as far as I can take you. The next town is just up ahead." For a long moment, she didn't move. She just looked at me, her fingers still stroking the doll's hair. Then, without a word, she opened the door and stepped out, clutching the doll to her chest. I watched her walk off, continuing along the shoulder of the road, back the way we'd come. Something about that felt even stranger. She was just heading right back toward the stretch of road I'd found her on, as if she hadn't even needed a ride in the first place. I sat there, trying to make sense of it. I could just barely make out her figure in the rearview mirror, that doll cradled tightly in her arms. She was talking to it again, her lips moving in that same hushed whisper as she walked, and the sight made the hair on the back of my neck stand up. Against every ounce of common sense, I rolled down my window and called out to her, "Hey, are you sure you're okay?" I don't even know why I did it. Maybe I was just desperate for some explanation, something to make all of this feel less surreal. She stopped, slowly turning her head to look back at me, her face partially lit by my brake lights. She held the doll even closer, like she was protecting it from me. She looked at me with an intense, almost unsettling stare. "You shouldn't have stopped," she said softly. "She says you should never stop. She always knows when it's safe." Then she turned back and continued walking along the road, disappearing into the shadows. I didn't stick around. I rolled up the window, locked the doors, and hit the gas. Even as I drove, I couldn't shake the image of her in the rearview mirror, heading back the way we'd come, like she was retracing her steps, or maybe looking for someone else to pick her up. I've taken that road a few times since, and every time, I find myself looking at the shoulder, sure that she'd be there, walking with that doll. If these hitchhiking horror stories made you double-check your locks, hit that like button and subscribe for more chilling tales. Have you ever had your own close call on the road? Drop it in the comments. I'd love to know. Share the scare with a friend who's up for a fright. And remember, not every stranger is as they seem. Thanks for watching, and I'll see you in the next nightmare.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Lowe's knows to bring your vision to life, it's important to find the right color. That's why My Lowe's Rewards members get a free paint or exterior stain sample to test your look and find the perfect color to confidently refresh your space. Lowe's, we help, you save. Offer valid in-store only 6/19 through 6/25. Limit one per customer while supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See associate for details. Program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.